Today on Straight Talk Africa, more than 300 million Africans live in arid and semi-arid conditions. The World Bank, along with governments and communities, are combating drylands, desertification, and climate pressures across the continent. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, October 8th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I am Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll discuss the challenges of combating drylands and desertification on the African continent.
And being from a country that borders Mauritania and the Sahara Desert, I can tell you that it is pretty scary. Coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your comments and concerns. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, careful planning, better agricultural programs and water policies are yielding more food production and improving lives in the Ethiopian highlands. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
Dry lands in sub-Saharan Africa make up 43% of the total land area, account for 75% of the area used for agriculture, and is home to 50% of the population. Ethiopia, in the Horn of Africa, was once thought of as a desperate land of drought and famine. But over the last decade, ambitious land management programs have brought change, development, and prosperity to the Ethiopian highlands. Despite climate pressures, there is more growth and less poverty in the region. Magda Lubby with the World Bank Group works with governments and communities sponsoring conservation projects to counter land degradation forces.
The unsustainable use of the land resource, overgrazing is a typical area, but also the deprivation of nutrients from the soil. The lack of water resources. So overall, it's a vicious cycle sometimes. And that's why this regreening and sustainable land management efforts are so important, because they help reversing a very deep-seated, strong problem that countries have been facing for decades.
The strategy of using sustainable land management to eradicate poverty has been very effective.
Erosion from overgrazing is a major cause of land degradation. Today, cattle are not allowed to roam freely here.
The grass you see growing is the result of our work. We now cut and carry the bundles to our animals.
As a result, cows produce more milk, fields are greener, with quicker replenishment, countering losses to erosion. Meanwhile, conservation work is transforming other large areas of once rocky, lifeless land in Ethiopia. Wider terraces than traditional ones capture more water, allowing better, healthier cash crops. Some areas degraded by deforestation are being restored thanks to community-built earthen mounds and new grasslands. Forest management and regeneration bring new income sources, along with better flowing rivers and watersheds.
For many years, the land degradation has been considered as a fate, and we see increasingly that it's reversible, and there are many programs that show a lot of hope for success. And I think the Ethiopia example also shows that it is not just isolated pilots that are successful, but they can be successful at large scale as well. So I think this is really a cause for hope and cause for increased efforts to support such programs.
A greener living landscape attracts climate resiliency, community development, and prosperity. The World Bank supports community and government solutions to land management problems. Now, communities are benefiting by implementing the changes that are greening their lands. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our Washington studio is our distinguished guest, Dr. Magda Lovey, practice manager for the Environment and Natural Resources Management for the Africa region at the World Bank here in the nation's capital. I have to say, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, thank you very much, Chaka. It is really an honor to be here.
You're most welcome. And joining us via Skype from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, is Dr. Florence Wambugu, Chief Executive Officer of the Africa Harvest Biotech Foundation International, a non-profit organization that she founded in January 2002. Well, I have to say, frankly, that I'm equally honored and extremely gratified to have the opportunity to host you two for the first time on Straight Talk Africa, Florence.
Thank you, Shaka. It's an honor also to be involved in this and be invited.
You're most welcome, ma'am. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. Your country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Magda. What was your impression, really, of what you were able to see in Ethiopia? It looks like you have fantastic results there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just came back from Ethiopia, where I was last week, witnessing some of those things that you saw on the video. It is really encouraging and extremely uplifting to see some of the valleys and landscapes really green that used to be brown and quite hopeless. I was in Ethiopia 10, 15 years ago when the picture was very different. And so now it's really wonderful to see some very positive results.
So what would you say is the secret behind that, really?
Well, the Ethiopian success, I think, has a lot of elements. One is that the government has started to work on this very systematically, and there is a lot of commitment to support large-scale programs such as the Sustainable Land Management Program. But I think it's also extremely important that they involve the communities, and mm-hmm. it is the communities that own these programs, and it's not just the government coming with some orders. Mm-hmm. And we see visiting the communities that they are happy, they see results, and they are really for this program. This is their program, so it's very important. Of course, there are many elements such as providing titles or security for the land, which gives further encouragement for people to really work on that land for themselves.
And how important or how significant was the role played by the World Bank?
Well, we provide financing and we provide technical assistance. We also help countries connect where we see some examples that can be replicated. In this case, we helped Ethiopians to visit China, where mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. there are similar successes. But we are a small part of a bigger program that many others also support. So we are very happy to be part of it and really proud that we can be part of this success.
I see. Good evening, Florence.
Good evening, Shaka.
Now, Florence, the last time I checked, you come from Nyeri, which is in the highlands, really, of the, I guess, a great East African Rift Valley. How did you get into this business of dealing with, areas of arid or semi-arid regions?
I think I was just touched by to see the level of poverty and hunger. And I come from the highlands, and although I came from a real background of poverty and because of these very small units and, of course, not having enough to sustain large families, it was never as bad as it is in the arid and semi-arid regions. And for a long time, our organization, Africa Harvest, were really focused on the high-potential area and very much known for promoting tissue culture banana and other technologies that are easier to disseminate in the areas where there's some level of rainfall. And we were very, very successful indeed on this area of what the transfer of technology in these areas where there's enough land for and all that. But over time, about 6-7 years ago, we realized that we have to really move to the ASEOS because that's the area where the World Food Program owns on a every half the year. We look at these areas as always hunger and poverty. And almost 4 months in a year, they have to be really supported by World Food Program and even individuals coming together to support these very arid areas and because of the poverty and hunger and all that. And because of that, we asked ourselves, what could we do? And we saw government really moving in sometimes, try to move on some seeds we could call resilient seeds like sorghum and other crops. But it was done in a way that, because it's a response to the hunger and poverty, it already went back to the same vicious cycle. And working with International Fund for Agriculture Development, IFAD, which is a bank which normally gives loans, but they also give grants. The grants are there really to inform the loans. We obtained a sizable grant from IFAD, and this grant was given to go to the ASEOS and explore how we could actually do this work sustainably as Africa Harvest, and kind of do it looking for lessons that what could we do differently that could provide some level of sustainable development within ASEOS in Kenya, really.
I see.
And we selected for some very dry areas, and so that's how we got into that.
I see. As I did my research, as I did my homework, I must say frankly that I nearly got mad at you because you describe some of the most important crops to me, at least as I grew up, as orphan crops. We're talking about bananas here, cassava, sorghum, and sweet potatoes, which apparently you also actually grew up on. Why do you call them orphan crops?
I didn't call them that. That's the way I found them being called. In fact, my business would be to turn them out from being orphan to being the indigenous African crops. When I tell people that sorghum is indigenous to Africa, in fact, maize is introduced, sometimes they almost feel angry because they believe the crop for Africa has been have been maize. But maize came about 400,000, I think it's 400 years ago. About the 14th century, actually. It was introduced by the Portuguese and all that. Otherwise, sorghum was a crop for Africa. And it is actually the crop very suitable for the arid times we are having where there's challenges of drought and the others like millets, cassava. There's millet, there is cassava, there is these crops that are really resilient and they're the crop that can stand the drought, they can stand the floods, and they are the crop we need to improve and to disseminate in these arid and semi-arid areas of Africa because when we don't have rice or maize and all that, they actually do help the poor. And they can be turned to industrial crops as well with the visionary leadership, with investment. For example, we have seen cassava is a major crop in Asia. It can be turned into starch, into food, into mix. In West Africa, cassava is mixed.
I see. We have to go for a break, Florence, and we'll come back later. Before we pause, of course, for a short break, would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website, Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Desertification is a major problem in Africa. Two-thirds of the continent is desert or drylands, and 74% of its agricultural drylands are seriously or moderately degraded. The areas with the biggest dynamics of desertification are concentrated in the Sahel region, the Kalahari in the south, and the Horn of Africa. To some degree, land degradation affects at least 485 million Africans. Recent estimates suggest that more than 30% of the land area of Rwanda, Burundi, Burkina Faso, South Africa, and Lesotho is severely degraded.
Sia Nyamah-Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Nyamah-Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidui. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you again, Magda. Do arid and semi-arid regions have the potential to positively contribute to Africa's agricultural growth and development, in your view?
I believe they do, and some of the examples that we have seen in Ethiopia already show that land can be rehabilitated and it can turn into productive land again after being degraded. Mm-hmm. We are also supporting irrigation programs that help agricultural production in some of the dryland areas. Generally, I think there is significant potential to help these areas to start generating the economic results that other areas do. But you need some investments, you need investments in people and also in connectivity to markets. Development of skills so that people can also start diversifying out of subsistence agriculture and start connecting to markets.
What are some of the factors that are driving desertification and encouraging the growth of dry lands on the continent?
Well, clearly, drylands are naturally dry, but the degradation on drylands also can be made worse by unsustainable practices such as overgrazing, the overuse of groundwater or surface water resources, mm-hmm. Deforestation. As we know, forest can provide a very healthy ecosystem and protect from upstream areas. Being deforested can become like a significant cause for downstream degradation. So many of these practices over time have been contributing to further desertification and land degradation. We also know that climate change is going to affect the dryland areas. In fact, some estimates indicate that dryland areas are going to increase potentially significantly, and precipitation in some areas, especially southern Africa, is expected to reduce quite significantly.
Hmm. Florence, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, Florence, again, I was reading somewhere where you granted an interview, and the journalist referred to you as Africa's banana mama. What exactly did that journalist mean by that?
It means that we have been able to look at a crop that is a crop that is so important because, as you know, coming from Uganda, Shaka, that is truly the crop that feeds the people, and it can feed the people. And we have been able to bring simple technologies from tissue culture, from the lab, and rehabilitate many orchards in many countries. simply by putting these tools of science and knowledge and what into the people's hearts, small-scale farmers, and really making them produce enough sustainably and link that to the markets and all that, working with the several organizations, development partners, and so on. It's absolutely important that if you are going to fight hunger and poverty malnutrition, we do capacity, we help the people, we work through the value chain, and work at the grassroots level and make it sustainable so that people don't have to depend on us again. They can continue even when we are not there. And also, I think when we come to, that's why the banana comes in, because we have really done a lot in terms of rehabilitating oceans and really making banana to be a crop, just like coffee or tea, where it can provide food and provide income and sustainably help many families. Now, we go back to the sorghum story. We realize the same knowledge we have, we can also do that for these arid areas, arid and semi-arid areas. But that is a bit more difficult, more tricky, and need to be done what I call integrated farming systems. It can't be done with one crop like banana. You need to have a different types of crops at different times. There are those that will come during the beginning of the rains, because in those arid areas, there's rush rains comes once and disappears. And then you need to have a different variety of beans, like pigeon peas, that will stay longer. And at the same time, you need to think about resilient small animals like chicken and goats. And then you need to think about the water management and also the soils. So it has to be done differently in a more sustainable way. And overall, let's go to policy. That is, the governments of Africa has to really be very visionary and invest in these arid and semi-arid areas, because it cannot happen otherwise. Even as we're hearing the story of Ethiopia, there has to be visionary leadership to invest in agriculture across the board in especially those arid and semi-arid areas. The very, very dry areas, then you need to think of pastoralists, how you can help pastoralists, because they have also had this challenge that when the drought comes, many animals die during the dry season. And that can be managed, again, by visionary leadership, or having to harvest the animals before the drought, and again introducing them by the beginning of the rains. And so what we need is not just moving in with agriculture, but moving into agriculture policies and investment, because it's in those arid and semi-arid areas where the land is remaining and where the potential to increase production is enormous indeed, and huge chunks of land are remaining. And I see their potential is there is very great. And we can learn from others, actually. We can learn at what other countries have done. Brazil has turned dry areas into production areas. So more countries like Israel are farming what we call, probably we could call them dry areas, and farming and producing crops and, in fact, exporting globally. So there is a lot to learn how we can actually turn these arid semi-arid areas into bread baskets and make Africa a continent that is food secure and is exporting outside instead of us importing food crops all the time.
In terms of nutrition, Florence, how important is the banana? Because I've heard people, for example, in your country, Kenya, they tend to look down upon the Ugandans, especially those who eat matoke, the banana. They say that in terms of nutrition, you're better off eating ugari, ugari, of course, from maize meal or corn, rather than bananas. Is that true?
I'll say that whether it's banana or whether it's ugali, none of them is nutritionally whole by itself. I know even the matokes, they need to eat the peanut sauce, which is the source of the protein, actually. In Kenya, the ugali is eaten either with the fish by the people at the lake who are able to get the fish. At the coast, they get the fish, which is a good supplement. The people in the highlands, like where I come from, they eat beans. And that brings the protein in and the green vegetables. I think these crops on their own, even sorghum on its own, is not wholesome. They need to be eaten with other things and or mixed with other crops. Even rice itself is not nutritionally balanced. It need to be added protein and vitamins and other things. And so what we try to advocate, even when we are supporting the sorghum or banana or cassava, is truly try to as much as possible to bring in a balanced diet, which is the starch, and then a little bit of beans and veggies, and so that nutrition is very, very important. It's not just enough to have food. We need food and we need nutrition indeed, especially with the children, because they're stunted at a very early age. It becomes a serious problem throughout life. So we are really getting very, very conscious about food and nutrition and working towards improving food to make them more nutritious than ever before.
I see. Thank you so much. Let me go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Shaka. Good evening, Dr. Magda and Dr. Florence. I want to find out from Dr. Magda and Madam Florence. In Africa, we discovered that people concentrate in using fertilizer in all this farm produce. Why is it that in the 80s and 70s, our people concentrate more in this issue of crop rotation type of farming? And this system now is very, very different, and this shifting cultivation. And the banana, I want to find out the rationale of eating banana and fish. What is the nutritional value of using those two items, banana and fish? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't know whether you really got the question so well, or I gather that he was talking about the importance of fertilizers or something of that sort.
Yeah, I mean, certainly fertilizers are important, but I think the other techniques that exist for sustainable land management are equally important. Mm-hmm. You cannot simply resolve issues by using more and more fertilizer, because mm-hmm. that itself has certain implications on your resources, particularly water resources. But certainly a good balance between good techniques, good irrigation methods, and using some of the fertilizers are important. But we also see some countries subsidizing fertilizers, and then fertilizers might get overused. So that's not a simple solution.
I hear you. Florence, can you hear me?
Yes, let me say that Africa is a continent that have least used fertilizer. Indeed, it is so low that it has that is one of the biggest causes of very low productivity. And the reason why there's such low fertilizer is the cost, because many countries have imported from Europe and it's very, very costly. And many countries we look around are now thinking about blocks or countries being able to produce their own fertilizer. And although I agree with my colleague that fertilizer must be used in a sustainable and in a wise way, the countries that have poisoned their water with fertilizer have used fertilizer, a lot of it, over a long, long period of time. And we can learn from that and use it in a better way to increase our produce without necessarily causing the bad side of it. And we really need to increase the use of fertilizer in Africa, because we haven't even used it at all. At the same time, we need to promote the others. I agree. We need to promote the farm manure, which is really what's being used now, and all the other ways of protecting the soil. Agroforestry is so important, and terracing the land to avoid loss of the land, capturing the water, and all that. There are many ways we need to manage that. There was a question about banana and beans. These were examples. Banana and fish, I don't think we are prescribing that. What we are saying, and I'm saying myself, is that we cannot rely on one starch, one crop alone, because there's not one crop which has all the nutrients the body needs. While I'm not talking as a nutritionist, a lot of this is common knowledge, and that many, many cultures are always trying to balance, to bring in both a starch for energy, carbohydrates, and also protein. And vitamins, that's what the body needs to grow normally.
I see. Thank you very much. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. And still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Nigerian who has a comment on today's topic.
Okugbo Omunua Igodalo in Abuja, Nigeria, writes, For African governments to win this battle against desertification, the education policies of African states should be strengthened to significantly raise the awareness level of the average African on environmental issues. Laws, especially when it comes to tree planting and irrigation, should be rigorously enforced and assessed annually to sustain and improve the state of our natural habitats.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Trade Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Desertification appears to be one of the fundamental causes of widespread poverty and hunger in Africa. Soil degradation is a very dangerous phenomenon. Its effects include deforestation and overgrazing. Many analysts are calling on African governments, policymakers, and environmentalists to make desertification and dry lands a higher priority on the continent. And this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what policy would you like to see African governments adopt to prevent or reverse dry lands and desertification on the African continent? Well, let's begin with a comment from King Abdulaziz from Accra, Ghana. Well, Your Majesty, if you are a real king, thanks for writing to us. Abdulaziz says African governments must educate our people about the importance of protecting the land so that we can farm and feed our people. Another comment comes from Patricia Namdi from Uganda, who writes, reforestation and maintenance of the existing forest should be encouraged and monitored by African governments. Laws should be enacted to hold accountable those who damage the forest. The burning of charcoal should also be stopped, since it leads to the cutting down of forest. Land should be reclaimed for irrigation to make it more usable. Swamps should be protected to prevent deserts. Well, Shaka, many good suggestions, although I'm not sure how it can be translated into action given the realities of everyday life. On issues of burning charcoal, for example, when I was growing up, I'll give you an example, we didn't have a gas stove. So my mother cooked our food with charcoal. And most neighborhoods had a local charcoal vendor on the corner. Of course, that has changed over the years. And now most people living in cities cook with gas. However, this is not true for rural residents in many countries. Shaka.
Magda, how do you react to that?
Well, I think there are many ways to prevent deforestation. And also there are very interesting experiments, for example, using biogas, which I have seen just recently during my trip in Tanzania, in a village where they used cows to actually produce biogas, which they immediately translated to gas and lighting in the house. We actually are, from the World Bank, also supporting some experiments to channel the payments for carbon reduction that can be associated with such pilots. Mm-hmm. So there are interesting experiments, and I think these can be potentially scaled up with sufficient support. But I think generally there is an issue about reforestation and protection of forests that that we definitely need to take seriously and are working with governments to support programs.
What about the issue of policies? What policies, in your view, for example, do you think African governments should put in place for the sustainable development of arid and semi-arid areas in particular?
Well, there are lots of programs, obviously, that already are working and put in place. I mentioned the policy and practice of providing secure property rights to people. It's a very important part of the puzzle. There are also larger programs that need to be supporting people in dryland areas, because it's not simply about the subsistence production of food, but it's also about providing education, providing health services, social protection to the poorest people. So it's a whole package of government programs that need to be in place to support people in drylands.
I see. Mariama, do you have any more feedback to share with our audience, please?
Well, yes, indeed. Let's move on to a posting from Kasim Mohammed from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, who writes, we need massive electrification to reduce the burning of firewood and charcoal for energy. We also need to make deliberate efforts to make glass, aluminium, and steel cheaper and reduce the use of timber for building and making furniture. And while we are at it, let's look at another one, this time from Mahamadina Kana Diallo from Monrovia in Liberia. And I'll take a moment to say hello to the Diallo community in Liberia. Well, Mahamadina says, I would like African governments, through responsible institutions, to ensure that farmers and agriculturists observe a set target number of trees in a given period, both for afforestation and deforestation with a 3-1 ratio. They should avoid mismanagement of integrated land, water, management for soil erosion and salinization, and other forms of soil degradation. Also provide covers to protect vegetables and avoid pollution in light of climate change. Well, Shaka, this guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Maybe he should be a future Straight Talk Africa guest. What do you think?
Why not? Why not, Mariama? Florence, are you there? I'm afraid that Florence is not there. What do you think about this, Magda?
Well, I mean, many of the things, indeed, that commenter mentioned are exactly the kind of things that need to be done. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, they are already being done. I think the big challenge is to scale up these good examples that exist, to make programs bigger. And what I like about the Ethiopia example is that it is being implemented at large scale. Many pilots exist many places, and we have these nice examples, but in order to address this problem, really need it at scale. And all these elements of the policy and the programs, they really need to come together to help people in these areas.
What do you think about people who complain about what they characterize as leadership deficit? Because leadership is about helping one's people in times of greatest need. And yet, sometimes you see reports where farmers are basically left to fend for themselves when they face a drought, a flood, or an insufficient harvest.
Well, definitely leadership is important. But I think there are also bottom-up organizations and community initiatives that people can rely on. Of course, when big natural disasters such as droughts or even floods occur, mm-hmm. you need to have a good system. And I think in many countries now, the World Bank is working with countries to put in place disaster risk management systems that can provide early warning, the system to respond. But as we are talking about sustainable land management, it's also very important to look at not just how we react to disasters, but how we potentially prevent disasters or really build resilience so that people can react to these disasters much more effectively on their own.
I see. Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thanks, Shaka, and maybe for Diallo, we'll ask him to send his resume. Maybe there's a spot for him at the World Bank. Who knows? Well, this will do it for today's social media segment. Thanks to our guests for responding to our audience. And while there are countless priorities in almost every sector in Africa, let's not forget our environment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Simply subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Well, now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta appears before the International Criminal Court on charges of crimes against humanity for allegedly helping to organize Kenya's 2007-2008 post-election violence. Mr. Kenyatta is the first sitting leader to appear at the Hague Tribunal. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to today, and we are discussing the challenges of combating drylands and desertification on the African continent. Our distinguished guests are Dr. Magda Lovey, Practice Manager for the Environment and Natural Resources Management for the Africa region at the World Bank here in the nation's capital, and Dr. Florence Wambugu, Founder and Chief Executive Officer of the Africa Harvest Biotech Foundation International, who joins us live via Skype from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Well, I have to say, ladies, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka. I'm very, very honored to be here and very happy to contribute.
You're most welcome, and the feeling is mutual. Let's go back to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. I gather that I have my longtime fan by the name Oble. Good evening, Oble from Zambia.
Good evening, Shaka. How have you been?
I am hugely terrific. How come you abandoned us, Oble?
Come again?
How come you abandoned us? We don't hear from you anymore.
Oh, I was a bit down. I was sick, but I'm okay now. At least I'll be able to contribute to your show effectively now.
I see. So what is your question or comment, Obre?
Yes, today's topic is timely because what is happening here in our country, Zambia, is we have a lot of Chinese investors that have swarm the rural areas of our country, cutting down trees indiscriminately. I, fortunately enough, I wish to applaud the government of the Republic of Zambia that have put in laws that are very stringent to deter the indiscriminate of cutting of trees, because they've involved the chiefs who are at least in the outlying areas and helping the investors in getting proper documentation on how to go about the cutting of trees. Because, as you are aware, if the trees are allowed to be cut indiscriminately, we may have a desert mushrooming around. You know, in west of Zambia, we have the Kalahari, the desert in near Namibia there. So it's very easy for it to shift to Zambia. That is why the government of the Republic of Zambia, they put in measures involving the chiefs, so that they would cut for all those people who want to cut trees to do it legally, and so that we don't have a desertification in our country. I just urge other African nations to learn from what Zambian government is doing by involving the local people in to deter those investors who are coming with huge investment, such that in a very short time they can wipe up all the trees. But if they, those trees are managed and legalized in a proper manner, we will not have such issues like desertification of our continent.
I see. Thank you so much, and I'm sure your point is well made. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
In many African countries, a huge percentage of their land area is usually prone to desertification. In Ghana, it's more than 35% of its land area that is prone to desertification. That plus droughts have almost doubled during the last two decades. In Ethiopia, about 70% is reported to be prone to desertification. In Kenya, it's 80%. In Swaziland, it's between 48 and 78%. And in Nigeria, according to the UN, at least 35 million people are facing threats of hunger and economic problems due to the present scale of desertification.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. Let me come back to you again, Magda. Talk to us about how important is the international community, especially, frankly, when we come to this business of desertification and what have you. How important is, because it must be.
I think it's very important. Desertification affects many continents and many countries, not only Africa. Of course, Africa is probably suffering most because of its very large, large-scale desertification problem. But there is a very important element of bringing countries together to raise awareness, to increase the commitment, and to help also learn from each other. So I think on the desertification, the Convention of Desertification is an important framework. In Africa, there is also a partnership that exists under the African Union and TerraAfrica, which is a partnership that the bank helped countries of sub-Saharan Africa establish, is a very useful platform to facilitate this kind of common vision and support for programs. But also, I think development partners are very important to support programs. And so we are very happy to partner with many others, including the Global Environment Facility and many bilateral governments to support programs. But I think we could do more, and we could really scale up these programs much more if more would join us.
Florence, are you there? Florence, can you hear me? I see. I'm afraid that we still can't access Florence. What are some of the most important problems that you, as as the World Bank have encountered in the process of trying to basically pretty much do what you are expected to do?
Well, developing programs that need to be implemented at a large scale is always quite challenging. You have to have strong capacity that needs to be developed from government agencies down to the local levels. I think one issue is for us is always important to see what have we achieved. So it is monitoring, evaluation, impact evaluation of our programs to see what have we achieved with all the investments and technical assistance that we have provided. So we put a lot of emphasis on that to make sure that countries also start building up that kind of capacity themselves, to make sure that we have the important achievements that we are expecting from these programs.
I see. Well, I gather that Florence is back online. Good evening, Florence.
Yes, I'm back online, but only on the audio.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really sorry for the technical difficulties. I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful Nyeri heart. Forgive us for that.
It's well.
Now, Florence, again, as I did my homework, I found out that you once observed that Africa needs every weapon in science arsenal to feed its people. What exactly did you mean by that? Could you please elaborate on that?
That Africa needs?
That Africa needs every weapon in science arsenal to feed its people.
Yes. Yes, I think I can happily elaborate on that. I think if the fact that we are coming from behind, we may be at an advantage. Because right now there are so many technologies available for us to choose from. And one good example is how we have what I call leapfrogged with a cell phone technology and literally overtaken developed countries in terms of how we are using the cell phones, not just to communicate, but to do business and to transfer money and all that. And the same way we can leapfrog in agriculture, we don't necessarily have to try and move from the plow to something else. We can also look at technologies that are being developed that can benefit us, all of them including biotechnology, including organic farming, including many technologies that are coming up indeed. Technologies for water management, technologies for drought tolerance, technologies for post-harvest handling. There are so many things. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. That's what I mean. Because there are people who are picking and choosing, saying, oh, Africa should not use fertilizer, Africa should not do this, should not do that. I didn't think we're in a position to move very fast, just like the example we are hearing of Ethiopia and other countries. I think we are in an area where we didn't wait to be dictated, don't do this because we're Africa. But we chose what is suitable for us, we can move very, very fast. And the example I gave of the cell phone is something really remarkable. And so that's my take on this, that every country should look at what can benefit them and move very fast in terms of taking. For example, I look at cotton. Some of the arid areas, what you call arid and semi-arid areas, a crop like cotton is really good, and we can have a global market for that. And India is doing very well on this. China is doing very well on this. There's an area where Africa can do very well in terms of rehabilitating cotton. And the cotton has moved very well in terms of biotechnology, having cotton that is drought tolerant and is able to also withstand insect and pests, use of less chemicals, and so on. And so that's one example. There are many areas where we can also look at how we can improve and move very fast and be able to improve our productivity, not just in food, in fiber, in forestry, and many other areas. That's really what I mean by saying we need all the arsenals that are available for us to move to the future.
Then how do you bring on board those who are vehemently opposed to the introduction of genetically modified products on the continent?
Now, I don't think it's a question of bringing on board. It's a question of we have to create education. We said every new thing that comes across has always to be opposed. There's nothing, even when cell phones were introduced, some people say they cause this problem, they cause this problem. It's very important to communicate and, again, find the area where it's suitable. There's nothing that's good for everything and everybody. It's a question of country putting the right education, the right capacity, the right regulations to utilize these technologies which they find are suitable. And that's only one thing. There are so many other things we can do. So I'm not prescribing this and that. I'm just saying that all the available tools should be used that other countries are using.
Earlier you told me, before I forget, Florence, that you went to Kabale, southwestern Uganda, where I happen to come from, and that, in fact, you had gone for some reason, I think, to learn something about the sweet potato. And yet, when I look at your background, back in Nyeri, you seem to have grown up on the same crop, the sweet potato.
Yes, there's a lot we have in common. Truly, I always remember when I went to live in America, I thought everybody thinks food comes from a supermarket. And I was telling them the biggest sweet supermarket I ever saw is some sweet potatoes behind my mother's garden. Well, I'd come from school very hungry. I'd go and dig, pull some tubers, just sometimes just clean them and eat them just the way you do the carrots. And that would be our small supermarket when we came from school. And really, that really brings me very close to why I've been really promoting crops like sweet potato, potatoes, all these indigenous crops that many, many children in Africa and adults really live on, because many, many of our people in the rural area don't have supermarkets to run to. They only have their garden, the kitchen gardens. And that's something we must not forget, that if we're going to change Africa, it's good to see the bigger and mega international companies coming in, but truly the change has to come from bottom up, at the bottom of the pyramids. Our people, our mothers, must be able to feed their children and be able to take something to the market. And then we improve on that until we're able to export instead of importing. And so the policies that we bring, and really I always remember Professor Wangari Maathai, who again told you come from my home area, and this is true, by the way, from the same village and others. But really, it's just planting trees, encouraging planting of trees, which became a global movement of Green Belt. And well, banana is another story. Atichokaja banana is becoming like a Green Belt movement. And they're discouraging the deforestation, bringing policies, renewable energy, thinking about nitrogen fixing trees, increasing the source of firewood, because we can't tell the people in the rural areas not to have firewood, but plant the right trees at the right place.
I'm afraid, Florence, time is not our best ally. I'm afraid. Time is not our best ally. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Dr. Magda Love, Practice Manager for the Environment and Natural Resources Management for the Africa region at the World Bank here in the nation's capital, and Dr. Florence Wambugu, Founder and Chief Executive Officer of the Africa Harvest Biotech Foundation International, who joined us via Skype from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive.